The scripture reading this evening is going to be from the book of Luke, chapter 24, Luke 24. I'll be reading verses 13 through 27. We're talking with each other about all these things which had taken place. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself approached and began traveling with them. But their eyes were prevented from recognizing him, and he said to them, "What are these words that you are exchanging with one another as you are walking?" And they stood still, looking sad. One of them, named Cleopas, answered and said to him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem and unaware of the things which have happened here in these days?" And he said to them, "What things?" And they said to him, "The things about Jesus the Nazarene, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word in the sight of God and in all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to the sentence of death and crucified him. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, it is the third day since these things happened. But also some women among us amazed us when they were at the tomb early in the morning and did not find his body, and they came, saying that they had also seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it exactly as the women also had said, but him they did not see. And he said to them, 'O foolish men and slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and to enter into his glory?' Then beginning with Moses and with all the prophets, he explained to them the things concerning himself in all the scriptures."
I didn't think the lesson this morning was that bad. Our numbers went down considerably. It is good to see everyone here this evening. It's good for the encouragement that we give one another. It's good for the fact that we've been able to be here and engage in the activities that we have. The strength that we can all derive from this time that we've spent together in worship to God. Those that were here this morning will remember that we looked at the fact that the apostles, or the disciples rather, while it seemed like everything was getting ready to really come together and that they were on top of everything as far as the Messiah and the kingdom being established, that in reality they were not at all having everything tied together in a nice, neat little bow. And then when Satan was able to strike them, as Jesus said, they scattered as sheep. And they turned out to be, indeed, pretty miserable followers, because, as we're going to see here this evening, they failed miserably in standing up for Jesus, standing with Jesus, even though they had adamantly insisted that that's exactly what they would do. But we need to, this evening what we're going to do is to begin to look at things, the mistakes that the disciples made in their time coming up to this time in which they were all tested. And as Jesus put it in Luke 22, how they were all to be sifted as wheat. Mistakes that they made, and there'll be four of them, as we promised this morning, four mistakes that they made, things that they failed to do to prepare themselves for that particular moment. But before we begin to look at that, I want to point out the fact that when we begin to look at the scriptures, we'll see that this is serious business, what we're engaged in. That we're engaged in a conflict to determine the outcome of every one of our souls. This is not just a sort of a place we're kind of passing through and we make the most of it, and it's sort of like a really like a game. This is serious business. And to illustrate that, I'm going to look at the fact that what Paul said there in Ephesians chapter 6, in verses 10 through 12, where he said, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the full armor of God, that you may be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places." What Paul is saying here is there's a struggle going on in realms that we can't see, but a struggle for each one of us. And how we address that struggle, how we approach that struggle, will determine our eternal destiny. And that's exact. And we say that, and those words roll off our lips, but you think about that. Our eternal, meaning forever, destiny. Once you get there, that's it. It's there forever and ever, day after day, on and on, for eternity. So this is pretty serious business that we're talking about here. As you'll recall in our lesson this morning, Jesus, before there at the Passover, before he before they left and they went out to the Mount of Olives, Jesus had told them that a lot of things. Really, he told them a lot of things. He says there's going to be a comforter that's going to come. There are going to be all, I'm going to go away and you can't come with me. But it's a good thing that I'm going away, because if I'm going away, it means that I'm going to be able to send a comforter and I'm going to go to prepare a place for you. And a lot of other things that he said, some of which were confusing and some of which they really had to stretch their minds to be able to get their arms around. And I'm not so sure that at the time they were really able to do just that. But he told them, he said, look, you're all going to fall away. And you're all going to wind up disowning me. And yet they wound up saying that that's what they were, that they would not do that at all. I want to look at the sequence of events here. Lay the facts out before we begin to look at the things that they did that were wrong. Make sure that we have everything in order, that we fully understand exactly what took place that night. First of all, each one of them, all of them, we like to point to Peter and say that, well, Peter was the one that said that he would not deny Jesus. But there in what the passage that Steve read for us this morning, and in the parallel passage of Mark 14, we read there that Peter, not just Peter, said that he would not deny Jesus, but they all said the same thing. They all said that they would never leave him, even though he had said that they would all desert him. And he says this really as a matter of just a statement of fact. It's not like he's condemning them, saying, you know, you guys are really going to be miserable. I mean, you're not going to perform at all like you should. And I'm going to be disappointed in you. And you're going to be bad disciples. He just simply says, you know, this is what's going to happen. You're all going to be going to go away and leave me. But yet, they, as we pointed out, all said that they would remain true to Jesus. And finally, not only did they make affirmations of loyalty, you then saw that the later on, when the time did come and Jesus was arrested, you then saw them, every one of them ran. The accounts of what happened in the garden was, as soon as Jesus was arrested, they all ran away. The one disciple that we take to be John, it says that all he wound up with was a linen cloth to cover himself, and that even somehow got pulled off of him, and he ran away naked. But all of them, just as I said this morning, they scattered like cockroaches. As soon as the soldiers showed up to arrest Jesus and to take him away bound, that confidence that they'd had suddenly evaporated. Another way of putting it, these men had more fear of other men in them than they had realized. And so after all of them desert him, John goes on to the courtyard of the high priest, which is where they take Jesus. And so he waits in the courtyard. If you read the various accounts between John and chapter 18 and also Luke chapter 22, you read about Peter's denial. And if you read in Luke's account, there's not only the account of how Peter denied Jesus three times, but you have the recording of the fact that as Jesus was leaving the courtyard, he looked over at Peter. And that was when Peter remembered what Jesus had said that he would do that very night. And so as a result of that, it touched his heart, and he ran away and he wept bitterly. And then finally, we know that after the crucifixion, then this continued. This, you don't want to say it's not perfidy, but it's still, it's this, I guess, lack of faith, lack of strength in standing with Jesus. After the crucifixion, they hid themselves in their homes. Jesus said that they would do that in John chapter 16, verse 32. Behold, the hour is coming. Indeed, it has come. When you will be scattered each to his own home and will leave me alone, yet I am not alone, for the Father is with me. And then also, we read that they locked their doors out of fear. After the John chapter 20, then, we read on about when Jesus appeared to them. It says that on the evening of that day, the first day of the week, the doors being locked where the disciples were for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them and said to them, "Peace be with you." So what we have here then is that individuals that, while they had stood up and said and talked a good game, in the end, when it came time to put up or shut up, they shut up. They weren't able to put up like they had promised. And they all scattered, they all went to their homes, became afraid of the Jews, no longer the bold men that they thought that they were when they promised to Jesus, "Oh yes, if we have to die, if that's what it comes to, Lord, we're with you. We'll die with you." And then when the authority says, "Okay, you ready to die?" Well, you know, not really. But not only did they find themselves in a situation where they were not willing to stand up for Jesus, they retained little or nothing of the instruction. Jesus spent 3 years teaching these guys. And in the end, It was like it went in one ear and out the other. Jason read for us the story about the two men on the road to Emmaus. And it's just amazing then that they could, the things that they said in particular, there in verse 21, they said that, "We had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these happened." Now, I recognize we're not talking about the 11 that remain. We're talking about two other disciples. But nevertheless, these are men that had heard Jesus teach. And they just said, "Well, you know, I guess we made a mistake. We thought that he was the Messiah. Well, we must have been wrong. And it just didn't work out." And then finally, you have there in verse 37, when Jesus, they go back to Jerusalem, and they tell the disciples, "Hey, we've been talking to Jesus. He's alive. He really is. And then while they're there talking about it, in verse 37, verse 36, he appears to them and says, "Peace be to you." But then 37 shows their reaction. They were all startled and frightened and thought they saw a spirit. How many times had Jesus told them, "I'm going to die, I'm going to be resurrected. I'm going to go to Jerusalem, and I'm going to die." And yet, it never registered on them. It never at all registered on them what Jesus had said. Quality disciples? No. Not really. So, with this in mind, these are the things that happen to demonstrate their worthlessness as disciples. What were these mistakes that they made? What were the things that they had come across or that they had failed to do to demonstrate that they were not worthy or they were not at all good disciples? Well, the first thing they lacked was they lacked forethought. And what I mean by that is they weren't thinking ahead. They weren't considering what could possibly happen to them in the future, in the way of being challenged. Jesus Matthew chapter 24 and verse 43 is making another point, but he's telling them about the importance of forethought. And he said, "Know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into." And what Jesus is saying is here, you need to be prepared. You need to have yourself in some state of readiness for when those times of sifting do appear. And then furthermore, in chapter 10 of Matthew, he had said earlier when he sent them out, he said, "I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be as wise as serpents and innocent as doves." So how then are we to be wise? How can we be wise as serpents? Well, one of the ways would be that we could be listening to the advice and counsel of those who are older than us, individuals that have experienced life more than we have. But yet, so often we like to be able to think, "No, I've got everything under control, and I know what I'm doing here, and you don't really understand my situation, or you don't really understand me." And so we have a temptation then when someone tries to tell us, "It appears you're making a mistake here," to tell them to, "Wait a minute, you just save your breath, because I've got everything under control for me." That's not being wise. Another way of being wise would be to take seriously Peter's admonition about Satan, that we need to be careful. Don't underestimate his powers. We read it this morning, 1 Peter chapter 4. We need to be grounding ourselves in God's word. I know in this day and age, when it is possible to have enough, there is enough entertainment attractions out there that we could probably entertain ourselves 48, 72 hours in a day. There's just that much that's out there. Whether you want to talk about sports, whether you want to talk about movies, whether you want to talk about games, either internet games or computer games, there are books. There's any number of things we could engage ourselves in that is entertainment. And so consequently, our time is very much being pulled in different directions. There's all of these things out here trying to pull us into various directions. For instance, Little League. There's nothing wrong with Little League. That's good. It's good for boys to play or girls to play on a team. It's also good for men to be coaches of those teams. But if those get to the point to where they're consuming your time that you cannot put into things that are eternally important, then you've gotten to the point to where you've got some priorities a bit out of order. And I recognize that this is difficult to do. For many people to be to sit down and to read the scriptures, they find it very, very dull. And there's not really anything much of interest in there. And yet, we still find ourselves neglecting it. And then when we get ourselves in situations where we are perhaps tested, can't figure out why we fall flat on our faces. Another way we can be wise is by cultivating habits and thought patterns suitable for a Christian. And by that I mean things like to be controlling your temper or avoiding tempting activities, things you really ought not to be engaged in, or thinking good of others, controlling your thoughts about others. Any number of things that we can engage, we can do to train ourselves to where we're better servants of God. And those are ways, there's just a handful of the ways, and yet so often we let those things go. We simply don't worry about what's going to happen on the future, and then we're going along, cruising along in life, and out of the blue, boom, something hits us, and we fall flat on our faces. Either we fall flat in such a way that we bring disrepute upon the church, and we're embarrassed by that, or what's even worse is we simply say, well, that's it. I'm walking away altogether. I'm not going to have anything to do with a God like that. I'm not going to have anything to do with a God that lets things like that happen. Or the price is just that I'm being asked to pay is just way too much. It's almost like what one person, illustration I heard one time. We're driving down the road. We see a stop sign. We don't wait until we get to the stop sign to hit the brakes. We start slowing down ahead of time because we know that we have to start slowing down early and be prepared for that. And yet so many times we and as Christians just don't even give any thought. I hesitate to tell this story, but just to me it really illustrates it. Back in the 70s, I had an aunt and uncle, had two kids. They're living in Nashville. And their oldest child, their son, was about to graduate from high school. And he and his girlfriend had scholarships to a nice college. And they were all set for the fall to go off to college. Well, after he graduated, they were going to move to Missouri. So during Memorial Day weekend of that week, of that year, they go to Missouri to go house hunting and leave him and his sister there. And while they are gone, he gets his girlfriend pregnant. As a result, of course, he marries his girlfriend, but his life is in shatters. It's just absolutely broken. He marries her, gets a job at a fast food place. And after that, it's just trying to make ends meet from there on. And there you had a situation where both his life and his girlfriend's life were totally ruined because no one gave any forethought to the situation about what would happen if they were to go off and leave two young kids like that alone for the weekend. And so why then would anybody be surprised that they gave in to the temptation. And yet we go through life like that, not at all being wise as serpents, but simply acting like, well, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. We need to be prepared for those events that are going to be coming upon us, whether it's a parent being concerned about a child that comes up and says that I'm no longer going to live as God wants me to live, no matter what that might be, or whether it's something terrible happening to you, like the doctor calls you in and tells you you have a terminal illness. We need to be preparing ourselves for any kind of event like that and considering those things in advance and how we're going to handle those things. That's what's called being prepared is all about. One of the other things, second thing that they lacked was they had not did not have a good grasp of the truth. Their idea about Jesus, the Messiah, was that that he was going to be one that was going to set up his earthly kingdom. As the note here says, it didn't involve the cross. Their idea was he was going to set up his kingdom. They were all going to help him rule. They were all going to have positions of authority in this earthly kingdom. And as a result, when it did happen, they were all devastated. As long as the cross was only talked about, that's all Jesus was doing. He's just talking about it. Ah, okay, I don't really know what he means by that. I'm not really worried about it. I just know that I'm going to have a position of power in this earthly kingdom that the Messiah is going to step up and or set up here. And so their perception of the battle then was it's going to be a physical battle and not a spiritual one. But then they had the night in the Garden of Gethsemane, and all that came crashing down. The cross became a reality, and their belief system was blown away with it. And they couldn't handle that. And so, as a result, without their Messiah, it was only natural. They're going to go off and hide in their houses. Everything they had thought they understood was gone. And they behaved just exactly as you would expect men to behave. One of the things we need to realize is that if truth is not on our side, if we don't have a good grasp of biblical truth, then we're powerless and we're vulnerable. Satan can come in and he can let's ask this little question here. What about this little thing about this idea you believe in? What happens if I pull on this? Does your whole fabric become unraveled? And that's what happens for many people. Unless we're grounded in the truth and we have a thorough and a concrete understanding of what God teaches in His Word, then we're vulnerable. Third thing they lacked, they didn't know much about themselves. Remember there in what was read this morning? Oh, yeah. We're with you, Jesus. We'll be with you to the death. And yet, that wasn't the truth at all. Like Paul wrote there in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, let anyone who stands, or anyone thinks he stands, take heed lest he fall. Boy, they thought they had it all sewn up. They thought they had it all taken care of, and when that wasn't the case at all. What they were incapable of doing was giving themselves an honest self-examination. But they thought they knew how strong they were, but they didn't know how much fear of man really existed in them. And as someone has once said, one who knows his weaknesses can become strong even on his weak point, but he who knows not his weaknesses cannot be strong on any point. Until we're able to honestly with ourselves do a self-assessment, honestly listen to an assessment by someone other than us, then all we're doing is fooling ourselves. and you don't really know yourself, you don't really know exactly what you're capable of doing. Finally, they didn't have the discipline of experience. Yes, they've had 3 years with Jesus. They've had 3 years at the feet of the Messiah. But the Messiah has always been in control. There hasn't really been anything in the way of battles to fight. Whenever there were any kind of conflicts with the Pharisees or the Sadducees, why, Jesus took care of them without any problems at all. They just had to stand back and watch. The closest they came to it was there in Matthew chapter 17, where they came up to Peter and asked him, does your master pay the temple tax? And Peter says, he pays it. And so later Jesus pulls him aside and says, Peter, think about this. Does the son of the king have to pay taxes? No, he's exempt. Well, he says, basically what Jesus tells him is, well, I'm exempt too. I'm the son of the Father. But he said, just so they won't be offended, you go down, drop this hook in the water, catch this fish, and they'll be what you need to pay the temple tax for you and me. Peter made a mistake there in dealing with the authorities, but Jesus was able to cover for him. So far, throughout these 3 years, they'd only experienced the trials of what we'd say raw recruits. Really, they hadn't gotten any further than boot camp. And that's all they'd ever really experienced was just the training that had come from being perhaps taught at the feet of the master. And previously, the worst sifting they came when they were unable to cast out a demon. That was the worst trial they'd ever had. With experience, they would learn the importance of the previous three: forethought, truth, and self-knowledge. One of the things that really comes with experience, as I pointed out earlier, a way of being wise is to listen to someone that's older than you. And when they come to you with some kind of suggestion, advice, or recommendation, it's worth listening to them because they've been down life a little bit more than you have. And it's worth it to be able to pay attention to what they have to say. So often we want to dismiss somebody out of hand because, well, you don't really understand. You're from a different generation. You don't understand my generation. You don't understand me. But with their experience, they've seen how Satan operates. They've seen how Satan can force people into situations where they do things they wouldn't have dreamed of earlier. We make a huge mistake when we underestimate Satan and his power. So what are we going to conclude from all of this? In warfare, preparation is everything. I know some of you have been in the military. It would surprise some of you, maybe not all of you, but it would surprise some of you that if you were to get access to the basement or wherever they store these plans in the Pentagon of the scenarios that have been planned out by the military, plans to invade countries that we probably today consider to be friends. And you'd say, well, why would they do that? Because they may be our friends today. That doesn't mean they're going to be our friends tomorrow. And if our military is doing anything like they ought to be doing, they're making plans to invade anywhere, any place around the globe. That's what they're paid to do. With us as Christians, as we pointed out, engaged in spiritual warfare, we can do nothing less than to plan for engagements that may possibly come. Whether it would be discussions with friends or co-workers, or discussions about the Bible with our neighbors, individuals that might bring up arguments that we would want to be able to show them how those arguments are faulty when you look at the Scriptures. We need to be prepared for those kinds of things, or to be prepared for whatever curves Satan throws at us in life. Whether you find yourself in the hospital, suddenly immobilized, either through an accident or through some disease, and having to deal with this infirmity for the rest of your life, or whether some other bad thing has happened to you, you need to be able, be in a position to be able to deal with that. And that takes forethought. It takes planning and preparation. Just like the disciples found out when they went to the Garden of Gethsemane, sifting can frequently comes without warning. Out of the blue, just it'll hit you. I don't know if some of you have seen videos of people that have. I've seen a couple of them. People that I don't remember the commercials. I think it was a commercial. People driving down the road and had a camera in the car, and all of a sudden, boom! They get hit by somebody. No time to react. No time to make any kind of preparations. It just, boom, happens. That's the way sifting frequently happens in life. Now, sometimes we can see events coming together to make it happen. But so often it happens out of the blue and without warning. We need to be prepared for that. And that takes time. That takes effort. A lot of effort. Finally, leave you with this question. I don't know if any had thought of this morning. We talked about Job. We talked about Peter and the disciples being sifted. If Satan accused you before God, what charges would he bring? Would you be would Satan be able to stand before God and say, well, that person over there, you know, you sift them and you're just going to find out they're nothing but a bunch of hollow kernels, no nutritional value at all, no substance to them. As the illustration we gave was that, oh, they're mildewed kernels in them. And when they're tested, they're just going to cut and run. They'll disown you, or they'll not do at all what you've commanded them to do, and you won't recognize them at all. They talk a good game. And so we want to leave you then with that particular question. It may be there are some here that have been thinking about that the fact that if they stood before God and Satan and they were to have their life in front of them, what would the judgment be? What would the verdict be on Judgment Day? Would they be able to stand before God justified, or would they be going to spend eternity in hell? And it may be there's some here that's recognized that the answer wouldn't be all that good for them, and they've been thinking seriously about obeying the gospel and putting themselves in a covenant relationship with God so that on that day of judgment, they know that their sins are forgiven. And it may be that there's some here that have done that. They are Christians, but they've not lived as they ought to. You recognize that you need to make some changes in your life. That you're not in a situation where, indeed, if you were to die tonight, your eternal destiny is not so assured. You want to get yourself right with God. And so you want to make changes in your life, ask God's forgiveness, and you feel like you need to ask for the prayers of the congregation here, and maybe even the help. And so we're going to offer that, extend that invitation to you as well, to give you the opportunity, as we sing this song, to come to the front and let us know in any way how we can possibly help you in either of those cases. I invite you to do so as we stand and sing.